Support for the Front Row on FM 89.1 comes from the Community Foundation of West Texas and from Citibank. Citibank's wealth management team of advisors, private bankers, and trust officers help customers create personalized strategies to help connect with long-term goals. More information on Citibank Wealth Management is available at 806-687-2955. And from Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Vast opportunities abound in art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by vastly talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Vastly different. The Lubbock Symphony Orchestra is presenting concerts this weekend at the Lubbock Memorial Civic Center Theater. We'll have the president and CEO of the orchestra and the guest conductor on today's show. I hope you can stay tuned. On today's edition of The Front Row, we are at the Lubbock Memorial Civic Center Theater just prior to a rehearsal by the Lubbock Symphony Orchestra. The orchestra is giving concerts this weekend, Friday and Saturday, here at the Lubbock Memorial Civic Center at 7:30 p.m., Masterworks Concerts. And joining us on the program today are Galen Wixon, President and CEO of the Lubbock Symphony Orchestra, and guest conductor David Itkin, who is in. Welcome to you both for being on the show with us today.
Thank you.
Galen, let me begin with you. Concerts this weekend, give us the overview.
The quick overview. Yeah. So we will listen to the Dvorak Cello Concerto, B minor, with guest cellist Amit Pellad. Amit comes to us from the Peabody Conservatory of Music and is just a fantastic musician, is known all over the world for being this incredible cellist. I mean, he's just everywhere, it
seems like. I've read some great reviews.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we're really anxious to hear him. And then in the second half, we won't have an opener. So with the long exposition of the cello concerto will sort of serve as our overture for the evening. And so then we'll have Amit greet us with his incredible opener of that Dvorak. And then in the second half, we'll hear the Rachmaninoff Third Symphony, one that's less heard, I think, of his works, but nonetheless incredible.
And a great program.
Oh, it is. It's going to be so much fun.
So for folks who have not yet purchased tickets, how can they do that?
They should call us 762-1688 or go online, lubbocksymphony.org. They can also come to the office. Our office is under renovation, so it's a real mess. But we still welcome folks in to see us and to purchase tickets. And if they have questions, give us a call.
Excellent. Great. Galen, you're a cellist.
Mm-hmm.
So in the absence of our guest soloist, tell us a little bit about the Dvorak Concerto.
Whoa, put me on the spot. So the Dvorak is one of the staples of the cello literature. Not so much because of its difficulty, although it is a handful, definitely, and one of the major audition works for symphonies around the world for cellists entering into that field. So, you know, it's a test.
Right. And every cellist would know it.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, probably memorized at least portions of it because it's asked for so often. But it's a unique work. One, it does have this interesting long exposition, and the orchestra plays this very symphonic way. And the cellist has to somehow rise above all that with a voice that's somewhat in the alto and kind of sometimes buried in the texture. So the poor conductor is stuck with, everybody, stay below the cello. So that's difficulty. But then the ending is very interesting. David, I'm stealing your thunder here.
No, not at all.
But the ending is very interesting because it kind of takes this interesting existential dip. You know, he starts this very introspective look into his soul, I think. He had just learned who died.
Well, his he changed it. That ending is new. That ending was not the original ending of the piece. And it is a very strange ending and marvelous. And I can't imagine it without it.
Right.
Because the last movement, which is incredibly energetic and full of fireworks and great fun, it's in a major key mostly. It all slows down and there's this deep, dark, incredibly pathetic, sad bit. And we wonder where this came from. And he changed the ending after the loss of the love of his life, who was his wife's sister, who he originally had wanted to marry. That didn't work, so he married the love of his life's sister. And when she, you don't want to go into that any further. And when she died, he was bereft, and he changed the end of his fairly new cello concerto at that point, and wrote what we now know as this rather elegiac ending. And then the ending that we have enlivens very suddenly. Mm-hmm. Right, just literally the last 15 seconds, the last 10 seconds. Yeah. Yes.
Very incredible.
And we get the ending that we expected, right at the last second.
So then you've got this cello concerto, and a normal cello concerto, and the classical rep would be somewhere around 20, 25 minutes. This thing gets 40 minutes.
42, 43 minutes.
Yeah, that's huge. Long. And it's just a handful, and takes some real athleticism to get through. So, wonderful piece.
But it's typical Dvorak. Full of tunes and wonderful, beautiful melodies, wonderful orchestrations, horn solo in the beginning, and all this wonderful things that makes Dvorak.
Yeah, it really is. It's just one of my, every cellist's favorite works. You know, it's just
we're excited to hear it.
Oh yes, can't wait.
Great, David Itkin, welcome to Texas. Welcome to Lubbock. We're happy you're here to guest conduct the orchestra. So that folks can get to know you a little bit better, tell us a little bit about you and who you are and what you do and your journey.
Oh, well, I actually live in Texas.
Oh, okay.
I live in Plano. Okay. I live in the Dallas Metroplex because I teach at UNT.
Gotcha.
I teach orchestral conducting, and I'm director of orchestral studies at the University of North Texas College of Music. That's a fairly recent change in my career. I feel like it's recent. It's 11 years ago. To me, it still feels very recent, because the whole rest of my life before I went to UNT about 10, 11 years ago was only in the professional world, which is how I know Galen from some our professional past. We worked together in the Arkansas Symphony for a while, where he was executive director and I was the music director. And we've been in touch ever since in his journey, and he ends up in Lubbock. And then I end up moving to Texas also. So that earlier part of my life and continues, because I'm also music director of the Abilene Philharmonic.
Right.
And I've been there 15 years. So we've been in contact. It's incredible. I can't believe it's 15 years. So we've been in touch ever since Galen's been in Lubbock, and he's been a little closer to me, and have been sort of theorizing my getting a chance to see him and come and work with this terrific group of musicians here. I'm actually from Oregon. Galen, until this afternoon, still thought I was from New York. This happens all the time. If you're a conductor, you must be from New York. That's just how it is. So, which I'm not. I'm actually grew up in Oregon. And then my journey's been, I think Texas is something like my 15th home since where I grew up.
Right.
So it's been lots of places.
Excellent. Well, you've chosen the Rachmaninoff Third Symphony.
I chose it. He won't take the blame. I will.
No, I'm going to take the credit when it goes great.
All right.
That part's true. When Galen asked me to come here, he said, now, kind of on the table is an idea that in this concert there could be Rachmaninoff Third Symphony. How do you feel about that? And I said, I feel great about it. It's really difficult. Are you sure that this is what you want to do? And he said, yeah, they can play it. And I said, great. And it's one of my very favorite pieces. And as Galen said a minute ago, it's not done nearly as often as the Second Symphony.
As number two. Right.
Which I think should be backward, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. This is, in my opinion, a much better piece. Mm-hmm. It's written, of course, way later in his life. It's written kind of near the time that he writes the symphonic dances. And there are actually little parallels, which we won't go into on the radio, but little musical, actual literal musical parallels between the two pieces. But the sophistication of his composition and his orchestrating is like what we see in the symphonic dances, and rather unlike what we see in the Second Symphony, which is it's a charming piece and a very tuneful piece, and we know why everybody loves it.
Right.
But this is while having all the things we love about Rachmaninoff, all of the beautiful tunes and all of the incredibly gorgeous orchestration and all the big luscious string playing, we get also a much deeper level of sophistication about how he's thinking about music also in this piece.
Right. So we think of Rachmaninoff, big, lush, romantic tunes, wonderful Russian harmonies that are kind of, you know, as you say, very sophisticated. Are those are things that we would expect to find in the Third Symphony?
Oh, very much. It's just that they've all exploded. They're all even greater than what we expect. There's the opening of the second movement, which is a horn and harp duet. It's just solo horn and harp for about the first 10 bars. And the harp accompanies with just some chords, a beautiful horn solo. But the chords themselves, if you heard the chords alone and you didn't know this was Rachmaninoff, you would think you were in a cocktail bar. They're such extended harmonies that they sound like jazz. If we take them out of the context of hearing a horn solo with them, we would think we're hearing someone sort of improvising a jazz. Because he's absorbing at this point a lot else that's going on in the world around him in the 1930s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And he's got these influences, all of what we love about him, but now plus more things.
Right.
And there's a cinematic kind of quality to the music as well.
Right.
You listen to it and you think, wow, what was going on visually that was inspiring you? Because there is this kind of this capturing of something. Mm-hmm. I can't put my finger on it. We leave that to the imagination of a listener. But it is an incredible work.
Right. Now, he's in America now, so he would be influenced by a lot of these things, right?
Sure. He's hearing jazz, which he heard probably before, but a lot more. He's going to hear a lot more theatrical music. Mm-hmm. He's going to hear a lot more movie music, which is a lot different from the movie music we have now. It was a lot more sophisticated in those days than it is now. And it was being written by, you know, we still have some great composers and very creative people writing movie music. We have people like John Williams and Bruce Broughton and others. But we also have a lot of it that's kind of schlocky and all sounds the same.
Right.
In those days, it was all great composers.
Major
composers.
It was
the greatest people on earth. Yeah. Maurice Ciaré and Dmitri Tiomkin. These guys were writing actual compositions that were unique and incredibly creative. And that's kind of where, if he's thinking about the cinema at all, that's where he's getting inspiration that's being added to what he already knows.
Right. And tell us a little bit about, like, the formal design of the piece. Three movements, four movements?
The design is so incredibly ingenious, and I'm glad you brought this up. When you look at the program, it'll say there's three movements.
Right.
And they're acting, in fact, are three movements in the sense that there's three times we start and stop again.
Okay.
But there's actually four movements, because what should be the two middle movements in a symphony, which would be the slow movement and the scherzo, are embedded together into the second movement. And when I say embedded, I mean literally stuck like a sandwich. The second movement starts and ends as a slow movement. It's the part with the horn and harp duet is how it starts. Stuffed into the middle, coming at you completely unexpected, is this incredibly complicated scherzo. And it just comes at you, poof. All of a sudden you blink your eyes and you're in it. His transition into the scherzo is so brilliant that you sort of looks like somebody turned the lights on suddenly. And you go, oh, wow, how did that happen? And then it loses energy after about 5 minutes and suddenly deteriorates right back miraculously into the music of the slow movement, which is where that movement started. So we have this big middle movement, which encompasses what should have been both of those other symphonic movements.
Scored for large orchestra?
Big orchestra. Yeah. All the woodwinds, triple woodwinds, a normal brass section. They're just utilized a little more than in some other places. 12 woodwinds, like we said, instead of the sort of classical romantic 8-ish.
Mm-hmm.
With all of the extra players, which means piccolo and English horn and contrabassoon and bass clarinet. Big bass clarinet part. Big bass clarinet solo, actually, in the last movement. And a huge percussion section and harp and celeste. So it's incredibly colorful, and hardly anybody that was ever born knows how to use those colors better than he does.
Why, probably. Yeah. Sure. Well, we can't wait to hear it. It's very exciting to talk to you and hear your enthusiasm for it. Thoughts on Dvorak as a concerto accompaniment?
Well, I've done this piece many, many times. I've done it with Amit once. before this. We did it about 6 months ago together, and that's when we met for the first time, and we had a great fun doing the piece. He is a fantastic player, and he's a very unusual player. The way he thinks about music, the way he thinks about this piece, is a little bit different. I mean, I don't mean different like he changes the notes, but he likes to think about the cello part as a consistent improvisation, and I don't mean that he actually improvises, but that the way he interprets what's on the page is a bit more spontaneous, which can be super exciting for us because it gives a life and a freshness to a piece we all know. It makes our lives as 80 people playing with him a little more challenging, but that's okay because that's part of what we do. Galen referred to something a minute ago, which is kind of an old joke between conductors and cellists about this huge exposition. The orchestra plays for 4 minutes before the soloist plays for the first time, which is gigantic. It kind of mirrors the old concertos of Brahms and Beethoven,
right,
with these huge expositions before the soloist plays. And a dear friend of mine is a cellist who I was doing this piece with ages ago, and every time I start this piece, I think of this moment, and I try not to laugh, because we were in a concert, and we got out on stage, and he was pretty close to me, close enough that I could say something to him without the audience hearing. And I just leaned down for a sec, as I usually do with a soloist, and I said, "You ready?" And he goes, "Does it matter?" Because he isn't going to play for so long that he's going to get ready later, actually. he doesn't want to be too enthusiastic too soon.
Right. Even
yes, and so that. So I said, so for now I don't even look at the cellist. If the cellist is there and breathing, I just start.
All right.
And I figure they'll figure it out.
I love that. Galen, I hear the sound of the orchestra warming up,
mm-hmm.
so I think we're getting close.
That's right.
For folks who now really, really want to come to the mm-hmm. concert, tell us the details.
Sure. So come here Friday and Saturday night, the 28th and 29th of February, 7:30 p.m. here at the Lubbock Civic Center. Call us for tickets, 762-1688. Go to the website, lubbocksymphony.org.
Galen Wixon, David Itkin, thank you both very, very much for giving your time this evening right in front of your rehearsal. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Claire.
Today's edition of our program will be on our website, kttz.org, later today. Rachel Boyd produces The Front Row. I'm your host, Clint Barrick. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Support for The Front Row comes from the Lubbock Symphony Orchestra, announcing the 2019-2020 season. More information is at lubbocksymphony.org.